Hello, Battletech fans. This is Travis, and you're watching Renegade HPG. On this episode of the podcast, we are going to be diving into one of the most awe-inspiring fan projects available to this community, Operation Lancaster. We're going to talk about the story it features, what went into creating it, publishing it, as well as the inspiration behind it. To do that, I am joined by the creative force behind that project, Devin Ramsey. Devin, thanks for joining me today.
Happy to be here. It's an honor.
This was exciting to see, and I feel like I've just scratched the surface in terms of diving into it myself because it's so comprehensive. But if I understand right, this was a 5-year project that you took on and published last fall, I believe, was when I remember seeing it. But is that right? Is this
Spring.
5 years of 5 years of work in the making shared with the community?
Yeah, if you told me that it would end up being something like this when I started, I would have run away and hidden in the darkest corner I could have possibly found. There's no way in hell I would have even tried this. But yeah, it ended up becoming a full-fledged 5-year project. No underestimation, no understatement there at all.
It's incredible, and the raw scope of it, when you shared it with me, was just awe-inspiring, as I had said before. So you mentioned a couple people in there. I definitely want to kind of go through kind of your collaborators on this project. The raw volume of Plog artwork in there is amazing. And so I've got to know what that was like, in that collaboration going through. But to give, we'll kind of dive into a little spoilers here, and I'll put a little time jump on the screen for people who don't want to kind of have a story. But can you give us, just what is Operation Lancaster? I read through it last night, to kind of keep it fresh in my mind. And so tell us, what is Operation Lancaster, and what can people expect if they go to these links and download this document to find from the story behind this expansive scope of art?
Well, it's many things to many people. We try to make sure there's at least something for everyone, something for every era, different mech designs, and combat vehicles, et cetera, to make sure that there's something that everybody can use no matter what era they like to play in. But as for the main focus of it, I mean, there's, gosh, how do I even sum up this monster? The best way I can put it is it's a long lore project essentially that focuses primarily around a specific event that takes place during the jihad era, the much maligned jihad era that a lot of people tend to sort of dismiss or just go, that didn't happen. But it was the only era where this story could really take place in because all of the elements were there at that time. It's essentially a Sorry, I'm trying to think of a phrasing for this. I've tried to find a way to sum this up quickly so many times, and I failed every single time. I'm sorry. But it's essentially multiple independent military units coming together, two mercenary units and a private military to try and fend off a strategic assault by Werda Blake, a couple of their special divisions. One of which is a provisional division, which is supposed to set up a essentially a foothold situation on a neighboring world to the homeworld of the private military force, and a full-fledged shadow division that follows up to basically come up, join forces with the provisional division, and curb stomp the ever-living hell out of anything in their path, starting an entire new theater of war and possibly screwing with the operation that is in progress by the rest of the Inner Sphere to smash the Werda Blake. Essentially trying to divide their attention. And well, there's a more personal reason to try and fend them off for these particular people because it's their bloody home. They prefer not to be no nuked back to the Stone Age because they were there. So,
And how did and that was beautifully done, by the way. So, there the path to success is paved with failures. So you did good. How much of this is ties into the lore of the era, and how much of it is kind of your own fan creation, your own pocket that you've created within the existing lore?
yes and yes.
Okay.
The I the the Almost a full year of the development of this project actually was spent trying to make it blend into the existing canon in a way that didn't rock the boat. And believe me, especially with Comstar, how they screw with everything that gets out of line, it was a pain in the butt. And I'll admit, I did hang a hat on a few things. I had to. It was just a case of this would not happen if Comstar didn't totally screw this up. And I did the best I could to try and make it as plausible as possible. I mean, the full history is there's interactions with existing canonical characters. I try to keep that to a minimum because I didn't want to, be, oh, everybody knows them, herp or derp, derp or herp. It's not that kind of thing. I wanted to make it so that the contact made sense at the moment when it happened, and it was within the confines of where those characters were at the time that they were, et cetera, et cetera. But I had to write basically a full 1,000 years of history to try and make all of the elements come together and be in the right places at the right times to have it all work. And I'll tell you, BattleTech's history is so dense, it is ridiculous to try and find every single toehold you can possibly get to make it work. There's a reason why it took a full year to try and blend everything, believe me. And a lot of ideas got scrapped straight up that would have actually been quite nice, but no, they just wouldn't work. So that's how it goes. But yeah, I will say that the creation of the two mercenary units, that was by my friends Zach Schaefer and Donald Butler, and there were contributions from various different people like Critical Rocket, even Tex actually of the Black Pants Legion helped out with helping to style well, essentially to set up the handheld weapons that are in there to at least try to suit his style, so to speak, and based on the input he gave me. So it's been a big community project for sure.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And the scope for those that haven't that are just coming to the project, there'll be download links in the description for this video. But the main document, I think 515 pages, a PDF, which is just packed of amazing artwork, lore. So we've got the story of Operation Lancaster, the lore, essentially a mini novel. We have a TRO of all the units involved in it. We have, you mentioned local fauna, and so there's section talking about local fauna. There's weapons, certainly Tex as a gunsmith, I can imagine kind of the delight he took and kind of contributed on that end. So you have weapons that are in there, you have battle armor that's in there, all these components that are involved in this major, theater of war, in this time period are in that 515 page document. And so I think that the novel ended around page 67, if I remember from last night, and then beyond that, it's just, and we're not talking TRO 3050, type of info with a little snippet. We're talking about, like TRO 3025 on steroids. So we got the background, we got the variants, we got the pilots. And so talk to me about kind of what brought you to that creatively, what inspired that, and what's your background? Because it read beautifully. I mean, I've read a lot of fan projects, and some, are like, good job, it's good. And some are like, why isn't Catalyst hiring you to do this for them? And yours was definitely the latter, and certainly, I've talked to Michael Todd, who's also produced three TROs. He was one of the earliest actually Renegade HVG podcast. And then, you mentioned, we talked about text already in terms of the scope of the lore and the depth of the lore. And I see all of that in kind of what you produced here. And so talk to me a little bit about I guess your background in terms of writing this stuff and what inspired you originally to do this and to dive into this massive 5-year undertaking.
You're gonna laugh. This is my first ever piece of fiction I've ever written. I've never done anything like this before. As for how it started, it started with a question that didn't even need to be answered. It was completely unnecessary and completely naive on my part. It was through Shapeways, of all things, my discovering of a certain individual's store, Orbital Heavy Industries, Jason Spikerman, who designed the new gen Sumitha, a couple of the other really key mechs, like the Memory Knight. Basically, he did the mech, the designs that are on the cover, he made.
Okay.
Either on his own, or and he allowed me to use them, or I commissioned him to make them. I asked him if it was okay if I used one of his designs that he had on Newton on Shapeways under a different name. Of all the stupid things that this could start with, that was it. It was, like I said, completely unnecessary. Basically, just, can I use this as a proxy miniature? Well, it's a proxy miniature, so yeah, kind of. So it's it, but that started a friendship, and it ended up becoming the first time I had a custom mech designed and things of that sort. And through him, I ended up spreading out to other Shapeways designers. You may have heard of Michael Zita with Metal Core Collectibles. He's been on Sarna a couple times now, featured, and his miniature designs are fantastic as well. He ended up becoming a key part of the project as well. He designed a lot of the vehicles, a lot of the mechs. I worked with him on those. And it started essentially as trying to be a fan TRO. It was not meant to be anything like this. It was just going to be a relatively small, fan TRO project. And then I looked at, I think what, my memory is a little fuzzy on this part of it, but I think what happened essentially is I looked at my, two very close friends, Zach Schaefer and Donald Butler, who both had their own independent, created units, and it's like, why don't we go ahead and just feature those two together, all three together in the same thing. And then I sort of looked at it and went, I need to create a whole lot of lore to make these units actually make sense. What if there was actually an event that made everything here important and actually matter? And that's pretty much the turning point where it became, well, gradually became what it is now. A very roundabout answer, I know, but it is sort of a, it's basically how it really came together.
No, it's
As
amazing how,
silly as that may sound.
no, it's amazing how things start. That's why I always like to kind of ask. And Bob Sharett's first novel was Wolves on the Border, and so there's talent there. So I encourage you to nurture it. Hopefully the official guys, if you have the time to do stuff for them, they'll take notice. But the story itself, there's not a lot of lore around the jihad. I was actually just listening to Wolfnit's conversation with Lauren this morning, because I'd connected my, Lauren myself, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't duplicating any of their conversation when we connect. And and at the end of that, he had mentioned just kind of how little was there for the jihad. And and this is a great story. And for me, as a disclaimer, I've my own fandom really only reaches up to a little after maybe like 30, 55 or so, in terms of where I've gotten to the novels, both as a teen and then what I've been able to reread, kind of having come back into. And so the jihad, the Dark Age, everything beyond that is still, very new to me. And this was, I would say the first kind of comprehensive story that I've dove into for that era. And it was incredibly engaging, and I loved kind of what went on, and the scope of going from the space theater to the orbital theater to the ground theater, and then from regions to urban combat and specific battles, and then kind of bringing that back out, was really impressive to me. And so what went into kind of crafting that campaign, that novel campaign? Was there any tabletop involved that inspired it? Do you guys play things out? Was it all created in your head? Because it was just remarkable how well everything tied in together, in that story.
We collaborated on a lot of the ideas and the storytelling, making sure that we were all comfortable with how the units were presented, making sure that everything worked out. The only real tabletop testing we did was, and this is the reason why there, one of the reasons why there aren't any scenario packs. The other reason is I've never played them, and I've never actually, sure as heck, I've never written one, so I did not feel comfortable trying. Because I knew it would be a disaster. Let's just be honest. It's just what it's going to be. So that's one of the reasons why the tables of organization and equipment are in there, so people can sort of just take what was intended to be presented in this and make their own scenarios out of it. It was a lot of back and forth, to try and make sure that the story felt like it presented like a real battle campaign. And just makes sense essentially. Zach and I especially, but Don had some huge input as well. But Zach and I especially went back and forth and made sure that that things were, that they felt right. I know I'm sort of sound like a broken record here, but there really was no actual real campaign play. It was just figuring out where who is going to be at any given point and how everything's going to come together.
Gotcha. And there's so few stories that I've seen that really weave kind of that battle space aspect, the aerospace aspect, the battle tech aspect, the city tech aspect, and you get everything, in this novel. And so what is your background as a player? Have you played each of those systems? Were you able to take knowledge in, or was it purely just creative and story driven and kind of developing from there?
Really more story driven, honestly. I've played plenty of tabletop, over the years, but I was even actually a local battle master for Dark Age. Oh dear, but that was so long ago. But it was really just story driven for the most part. I looked at a few things of Aerotech. I have very little experience, honestly, with Aerotech. It's mostly just looking at the rules, trying to make sure that things make sense the way they're presented, and trying not to do things that are too far beyond the scope of what the game can actually do. I think the only thing that I did in there that I don't think actually exists in the rules, as far as I can tell, was when the Phoenix, the warship, did that roll. Because I don't think you can actually do that in the game. I don't think you can roll over. You have to turn around, because it's two dimensional the way it's played out on the tabletop. And I was just like, you know what? It just makes sense. I got to do it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Present the pressure.
Reality is three dimensional, not two dimensional. So yeah, inevitably it works great.
But other than that, I tried my best to make sure that everything just fit within the confines of what I can understand for the rules of the systems I haven't played, and make sure that everything absolutely is within the confines of the systems I have.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
And let's dive into the art a little bit, and I would like to just dive into the gallery, on the screen, and share it on the screen, and we can kind of talk about some individual pieces, and, I'd love to, to kind of explore those. But there's, pulling a number out of my butt here, there's got to be close to 150, 200 pieces of art, high quality art, primarily by Matt Plogg. And so what was that? I was kind of doing the math in my head last night of how many pieces of artwork were here. And even if it took 5 years, of how frequently, these pieces of art are getting commissioned and produced. And so I'm really interested, and certainly for my work with Gallery 3025 and trying to produce new art for the community to enjoy, I'm really interested about that relationship that you developed with Matt and what it was like, the collaboration, because they're just beautiful, beautiful visual images here in what Matt did. And I'm wondering how much of that you were, giving through spec to Matt versus was Matt just intimately familiar with the story and kind of, fleshing it out on his own. What was that collaboration like? What was that relationship like, between the two of you in this creative process?
Well, a short answer based on all the options you just provided was yes. And it also should be said that, Matt was not the only artist. Alan Blackwell, who is also a tremendous artist, did the cover art, and Matt Maeda, who is a remarkable artist in his own right, did all of the the unit crests, and then the several of the color images with neat sort of metallic backgrounds and such. Blog is a madman. There's just no other way of putting it. He is completely crazy. He's awesome, though. I will say, I got very lucky with the entire art crew. I could not have been happier, frankly, with that. All of them were absolutely wonderful to work with. Plog is a very fast artist, it must be said. Basically, it was a case where I think it was about every other month or two, every month or three, it was a group of between 5 and 20 art pieces. A lot of them were, I provided him with, because they were miniature designs that existed, I provided him with as much reference as I could, 3D imagery, as well as I actually have the turntables of miniatures I had painted up, so he could get, as best of view as possible. He had all the specs, full technical readout information. In many other cases, he also had character information. So he went through and actually even got the liveries based on individuals and such. I had some references I offered him as well for that, the little demon logo and the demon S2 and things like that. But there were times where I literally just sort of said, I need something for this. And he would just do it. I mean, the best example I can give you, you may have noticed that weird-looking little sort of six-legged squirrel thing, the demon squirrel.
Yep.
I literally just said, I need something for a demon squirrel. That was it. That's all I told him. And that's what he came up with all on his own. It's just like,
Yeah.
this is awesome.
Yeah,
And then every, oops,
I'll
sorry.
share that. I'll share that image here, to overlay while we chat about it. But
And another really good example is the Anne Lawrence's Nightmare from Keepsakes, the image where she is in the, around the sort of Terminator 2-esque image. If I'm not sure if you got that as short stories or not at the end, but they're
I didn't
arguably
get there.
they are the crown jewels of the entire project.
Oh,
They
man.
are the best part. There is a moment where there is Colonel Anne Lawrence, the leader of the Dreadnought Battle Corps. She is, recalling a nightmare that she has, and I asked Matt to essentially come up with an art piece that could be somewhere in the story, because I didn't know what I wanted for an additional piece in there. I just knew that there was enough pages in there it needed another art piece to keep it consistent. That nightmare didn't exist before he did that piece. He just did it all on his own, and I added it to the story as a result.
Yeah.
And it was his ode to Sarah Connor of Terminator 2
Awesome.
was basically what that moment was. Things like that happened all throughout, where I informed the artist informed me, and as a result, it ended up becoming a better project in the end. Matt is just that good. It's
Yeah.
fantastic.
Awesome.
And Alan Blackwell, he did the cover as well as the clan mechs. The clan mechs were actually pre-existing sketches he had already done, I was fortunate enough to he allowed me to license them from him. And I chose them specifically because they were sort of an ode to the old 3050, original 3050 TRO, where you had the two-dimensional clan mech designs. So it was
Yeah,
the, the head-on vanilla pose, so that they stood out a little bit from everything else. And then Pyralis, I discovered her through, of all things, actually a Wings of Fire video that she did, the animated one that had that same soundtrack. And I just knew immediately that since I wanted a color dragon piece somewhere in there, and I just knew immediately as soon as I looked at her DeviantArt page, I'm like, yeah, this is the person. And she knocked it out of the park. I mean, it's right up there with Alan Blackwell's cover piece. And I honestly hope, she's not really a professional artist yet, and I'm hoping like heck that she becomes one. I really
Yeah,
hope more people commission her for cover artwork. So
definitely.
again, just magnificent art team.
Yeah, well, if we can steer commissions toward the artist, we'd definitely love to do that here.
Yes, please.
You had mentioned kind of tie-ins to other things, with Alan's TRO 3050 inspired stuff. It also caught a reference to the BattleTech cartoon, as I was kind of going through the technical readouts with I can't recall the name of the variant that was confused for the Centurion, and so it's fun,
Tyrant.
those little Easter eggs. Yep, the Tyrant.
The Tyrant, yeah.
And the Centurion was my favorite mech as a teen, so my eyes kind of quickly caught to that unit in your technical readout. But yeah, it's fun to
Good looking
see.
mech.
It's fun to see all the little references and Easter eggs that people could find in this, and so enjoyable. But I haven't gotten to the short stories at the end. I mean, I had skimmed. I think I got to skim through page 260 or something last night before I just passed out cold. And so there's just, it's exciting that there's even
Sure.
more, to kind of go through. And I mean, I haven't even touched reading each of the TRO entries yet. So other than the Tyrants, I had to jump to that because it looks so cool.
No blame.
Let's I want to pull up some of these pieces of art. We can kind of go through and kind of, I'll stop at some that just really stand out to me, and you can stop me at some, or just say, go back, Travis, go back to that one. And I just want to, I want you to kind of fill in the story behind each of these, and people kind of enjoy it, because as you said, they're so rich visually in terms of what Plog has created for us here.
I do look forward to hearing you. I'm hoping that you do get a chance to read those short stories, because I actually would like to hear your feedback on them, because they really do actually bring everything to the fore and actually present the characters not just in a historical context, but actually at a very personal level.
Most
And
definitely.
small spoiler, but one of the reasons why I could not break this into multiple pieces, as far as like having multiple PDFs and such, is if I did that, the whole truth wouldn't actually be in the document, because there are certain historical things that are recorded in the historical articles that actually end up being proven not quite entirely true once you hear about them from the perspective of the individuals who were there in
Okay.
the short stories. So that's one
Well,
of the reasons why I couldn't break it up.
that's even better, and is that history is a matter of perspective. You can't ever get facts from history. You can only get truths. Best case scenario, if you're getting truths, most of the time you're not going to get truth. But facts are long lost, and so it's only by the kind of combination of enough truths that you can maybe piece together what the facts ever were. So I love that.
That history is written by the victor.
It definitely is. All right, let's pull up. Find this folder, and we can dive in.
And this particular case, the histories that are inaccurate are the ones that the victor doesn't want people to find out about. So there are. It's not just, goody goody two shoes, good guys and horrible horrible bad guys. There's some gray in there. There's some very real gray.
All right, Devin, tell me, is it going to let me scroll? It's not going to let me scroll, of course.
Oh, is it only going to pull them one image at a time? Oh, you may have to unpack.
Actually, nope. There, did it change?
Yes, delayed, but yeah.
All right, excellent. Let's.
And that Highlander one actually wasn't even supposed to be in there, but it ended up actually being kind of neat as a bonus because it was supposed to be in Texas Highlander video.
Or not, oh, really?
Was that not Charger? Not Highlander. Charger. Sorry, Charger video. That gotcha. One, yeah.
Nice.
That was the first piece of art commissioned, as I understand it, for the Charger video, and it just didn't make it in for whatever reason.
Interesting. All right, let's start scrolling. If you see something, you stop me. If I see something that's particular that I have questions about, and otherwise people can, I'll just keep teasing so people can be like, wait, I wish you would go back to that. Well, download the art file, which is totally free, linked in the video description, and you can enjoy it. All right, tell me about this one.
That one actually is the splash image for the short stories. I can't say too much about what's going on here, ironically enough, because it actually contains small spoilers for the short stories themselves once you've seen the scene that actually is depicted in them. But
gotcha.
One of the key things I will say is that Mad Cat in the upper right-hand corner, you may notice a Word of Blake sword on it. That was not originally a Word of Blake unit. That was actually owned by one of the protagonist characters, and he has a bit of an unfortunate reunion, shall we say, with it.
Oh boy.
Yeah, things are a little, shall we say, interesting.
All right, this is a cool
that one. Move. That one's the inside of a Colossus class dropship, according to Matt Plogg. That was, I had originally imagined sort of multiple flight decks, just. Mm-hmm. Standard configuration decks, but he actually is the one who came up with this really interesting idea for how the individual vehicles would be carried inside of it, which is these individual bays. That way, they could be worked on, which is correct to the lore because there are vehicle bays that where the vehicles would actually be worked on. And he came up with this whole conveyor system and the idea that they would go into sort of individual bay rooms that could be closed up so that if there is stuff floating around the bay, it won't just go across the entire dropship. Where if you you can't find your 10mm wrench because it's on the other side of the ship. It's not exactly a very fun moment. Right. Things like that. And it's just really clever, insightful ideas. I had no idea he was going to do that when I commissioned this particular piece, but it worked out beautifully.
Yeah, I love this because this is one of the for Gallery 3025. I've a bunch of kind of spec layouts of art that I would like to get as soon as I find the artist, which is the hardest thing for that. And one of them is seeing the inside of a dropship as it's getting loaded and just kind of all the the chaos of strapping these down, securing things, moving around, getting things where they're supposed to be. So yeah, that's why this piece really stood out to me. I was like, somebody got it, I want to do it again. So
yeah, I'm with you. I'm with
cool.
you.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right.
And the other thing also I will say, if you go back to that one real quick, is I do really like the idea of it wasn't intended, but the VTOL, the Albatross Light Attack VTOL that's on the bottom left there.
Mm-hmm.
We had never really given him any images on how the thing would fold up for transport. And the original version of that, the very first iteration of that, was a Lego model by Michael Zita of Metalcore Collectibles, and it folded up like that. So it was just a happy coincidence. He was kind of chuckling to himself when he saw that. He's like, yep, yeah. He got it.
Awesome. Love it. Characters. All right, tell us about that. Oh, I see some Thunderhead Studio shout out there. Love it.
Thunderstud, yes. He tried to open a studio somewhere on another planet, and apparently that he learned he should only ever open one. But yeah, that's that one. That's from the short stories, and that's a street fight that happens during Operation Lancaster. It's a pretty brutal one.
Yeah.
I'll admit the Thunderhead Studio thing. I asked him to put it in there, but Thunderhead wanted to make sure it was just primarily the logo. He didn't want to take up too much space on it. So that was the nice sort of
Awesome.
compromise we ended up with.
All right, tell me about this beautiful scene. I love things that aren't just mech shooting at each other. If people haven't figured out from listening to all the podcasts, things that set the scene. I love the cityscape. I've in my head, and I've this is one thing I want to ask Lauren when we connect for podcast, and certainly any other bigger guys. It's just, I want to see more of kind of what the planets look like, what the cities look like. We tend to get, novels and stories set around the kind of more run down, like the outskirts, but we really don't see like how advanced, are the planets that are fairly well protected from war. And I love the scene in terms of, seeing the spaceport in the distance. But
Acolyth 3. I love that. I love the cityscape. The original intent was actually not to even have the albatross that led to Attack VTOL there, but I figure this is a militarized society. There are it's you have compulsory military service on this planet, et cetera, et cetera. And I figure it'd probably be woven straight on into the actual day-to-day business of living on that planet. And you can see it, as you point out, the spaceport in the background. It even has naval lasers for defense on there and all sorts of details. And this is one that Plog, I tipped Plog quite a bit, and he commented that he should have charged more than the standard amount for this, and there's a reason why I tip him, because he'll stick with his original commission price, even though he goes completely bonkers insane with things like this, where it's just so much detail. The only thing I'm a little sad with this is I never got around to actually install including the additional VTOL craft on the left-hand side. I always thought that it might be kind of fun to create little specs for those, but I never got around to it.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I mean, your eye, you could stare at this for 10 minutes and you'll be seeing everything every time you move your eyes.
Yeah, and for the viewers who aren't watching this on a big screen, these are much higher resolution than what we're seeing here right now.
Definitely. Yeah, download those documents, and you can go through, each of these images. Got a little bit more city. Got some battle armor. So this looks like a scene from the novel.
From the Operation Lancaster historical article, people were wondering, how that why the Draconis Combine's involved. Well, those aren't exactly owned by the Draconis Combine, though they probably still are on paper. The Blackwood Templars have some interesting ways of getting their equipment, shall we say, and in this case, it paid off later because they were able to use them during this particular event. You can sort of see how close things came to disaster on the right-hand side over here with that exposed button on some very scary looking little cylinders there. There's a reason why they're very scary looking, as I'm sure you're very familiar with at this point. They were sort of the MacGuffin of the event, but it worked out. But this is one of the more interesting scenes by Plog for sure, with just the sheer amount of detail and the setting the scene. I love it.
Definitely. I like this day. I like the day in the life. The mech's just the background. It reminds me of Lobenstein's Archer, which is one of my favorite pieces of all I'm repairing. But
That was the Ronin Free Company is basically setting up their the defenses for when crap hit the fan later. That right there, oh my gosh, Waycross 2. That was a bit of a sad story. That actually is events leading to this particular view are actually featured in one of the short stories, the shortest of the short stories, but it's one that a lot of people seem to like when they read them. So it's but this was what's left after the Word of Blake attack specific planet. So you get some idea. Most people already know the stakes that are set when you're going up against the Word of Blake, but I wanted to make sure that they were reiterated quite vividly when essentially an entire civilization is lost. So.
Some warships, a lot of great warship action in the story.
Yeah, that shot right there. Oh man, I love that one. Yeah, I gave him a description for it, and I was not expecting it to be quite as visceral of a shot, but man, he made it pulled off for
That's
sure.
awesome.
And
This is one I really enjoy.
that's what happens when you tell the the Blackwood Templars to make a low drop. They take it just a little bit literally. And I love, and no, I did not tell Plog to put that message in the upper left hand corner. That's all him. He does that kind of stuff everywhere, and I love it. It's
awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
Got some retrofitted vehicles here.
Well, you got a Hetzer, and you got something that was made out of sheer desperation. You got some local militia vehicles that were basically just, they were heavy LRM carriers, but they were sold. This is a rundown militia on a backwater planet, essentially, that couldn't afford to maintain anything at all after their economy went bust. This is, you know, Ashkham 4. And basically, there was a local SRM manufacturing depot, and they needed additional support vehicles, so they just basically raided the SRM manufacturing facility, grabbed all the SRM-6s that they could, stuffed them into it, and prayed they worked.
Perfect.
But an SRM-78 is not exactly something you want to run into no matter what you're in the city.
Negative. Great character art.
The elite troopers. I love the design. I did sort of give Matt Plog a bit of a Titanfall 2 reference for the helmet style, and he rolled with it, as you can see, for
awesome.
Sure.
Very cool.
And the rifle is actually based on a prop I made a long, long time ago.
Yeah, just such emotion in these.
That's the scene I was
shots.
Telling you about, that one with the flames in the background.
This one?
That one. That's the one that Plog did all on his own without any prompting from me, and ended up resulting in an additional scene. So that's the kind of stuff he'll just do. And Dragon. That's something you'll also spot a little bit, is maybe in FedCom territory, but there actually are dragons on this planet, and they're not full blown like, you know, talking creatures or anything like that, but they're fairly intelligent, and they work sort of like military dogs as a result, and form a camaraderie with humans.
Awesome.
And the lead character, the commander of the Dreadnought Battle Corps, has a certain companion dragon, which will show up a couple times throughout.
Very
you may
cool.
have seen it in the mech bay a second ago.
I love this shot.
Yes.
If you give me a thumbs up, I'll make a trading card game card out of this one. That'd be an
go
awesome
for it.
Card.
Absolutely go for it, man. No problem at all. That's from the short story Nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, also I will say, that was one of the things that was really neat. I got to work with a few people, a few ex-military and some non-military who deal with very real PTSD, and I did the best. And PTSD is something that takes a bit of center stage. It's not, you know, it's not like a complete runaway of the story, but it is a very key plot point of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I did everything I could to try and make sure that it is presented fairly and appropriately, and not trying to make it some caricature of that you often see in so many novels that actually that deal with it. And it's an underrepresented thing anyway in general.
Definitely.
So. And I can only imagine these people going to war and coming back, you know, not having issues is like.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Surprise, Surratt.
Yeah. I love the classic battle armor, the elemental battle armor. It's definitely my favorite.
Yeah. I got lucky with some of the timing of these that actually, you know, had I commissioned them any sooner, they would not have been the redesigned, updated versions of them. That one I commissioned while the Clan Invasion Kickstarter, I don't think it was even, that might have just been done. So I got to have the updated elemental in there.
Nice. I'm
yeah.
Classic. I like the classic one myself. I think the updated one's a little bit too rounded.
That's fair. I can definitely see it both ways. The main thing I like about it is that it looks like it has a little more mobility around the waist.
Yeah.
Ah, the Tyrant. That one definitely has had a bit of a rough time, but it's getting patched up.
Love it. Love these mech repair shots.
Yeah. And there's our first introduction. Yep, that was our first introduction to the dragon in question that I was mentioning.
Awesome.
Yeah. And the one thing I will say about Plog's art, he is very underrepresented for his creature art. You don't see that really a lot, and he's really good at it.
Yeah, the creatures in here are amazing.
Yeah.
Good aerospace.
Ah, the Steel Cobra fighter, yep. And that was the reason why there's two versions of that space battle scene, actually, is that the first time it didn't actually have as much damage on the main ship. Didn't look shot up enough. Yeah,
This I like the shot. This is a cool one.
Oh, the mech bay here, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, the warships here.
Old and new. Well, old and older. Old in new condition and old and even older in not so new condition,
Yeah.
if that makes any sense.
Oh, totally. One thing I love, and it's hard for me to get my head around, is that, so much of my, image of BattleTech is ground scale, but just to kind of understand the scale of space, how big a dropship is, how big a warship is, all the things that go on there, it's yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to kind of let your imagination drift into that sphere and just how expansive the universe is and the technology is beyond mechs.
And what, and even medical technology, honestly, is something that's
Oh,
underrepresented in BattleTech. But whenever it is represented, it is extremely advanced, and people sort of seem to forget that a lot.
yeah.
Ah, yes, ah, the
Which one?
Solaris 7 shot of the Raven against the Jenner. I
There we go.
love that one. Thunder Chicken. I love that Raven. Raven with an AC-20.
Yeah.
You just can't go wrong.
Too funny. And we got the Cyclops here, back view. There's is that Cyclops? Yeah, it's in the TRO, isn't it? It's in this.
That's War Crime. That's the Quad LB-10X autocannon. Yes, it is a reference to the MechWarrior Online meta thing, but it's fun in tabletop too. And this
Well,
is sort of a demonstration of the realities of war. This is something I did not shy away from. And whenever I could, without being too maudlin or having too much to turn people's interest away, I tried to include things like this.
yeah, I have the framework of a comic in mind. I don't think it'd be big enough for a graphic novel, but a comic story that I'd like to make my own little fan project. And a big thing about that is showing the cost of war and its personal impact on people. But yeah, so this is a great image.
It's difficult to balance entertainment and that reality. And if you're able to strike that balance, more power to you. Absolutely.
I think, it's just you stay away from spectacle. And, if you look at entertainment as telling a story, a human story, and you're honest with that story, I think that's the path to take. That's why I don't like shows like, what is it, The Boys or whatnot. They're just, I was never like a horror porn kind of guy that just like, I don't like
The
glamour
Boys is
everything.
just goofy silliness, honestly. I
Yeah.
really haven't read the comic. I've only seen the series, and my understanding is the series is better than the comic. So, I can't speak for the comic, but it's the comic I look the series I look at as just being it's just stupid fun. That's all there is to it, But yeah, I do understand that the comic is a bit overboard. And here we have a reference to Critical Rocket. His he wrote a few character profiles, and also was a consultant for this, and that's his character's Wolverine there, not having a very good day. But that's why it's got his logo on it, and that
Awesome.
shows up twice in there. It's basically the Dreadnought Battlecore's first real hero. Not that
Gotcha.
she survives to hear about it, but
Well,
yeah.
that's the last of that gallery of the story. We were talking about the fauna, so let's pull up the fauna. Let's see some of Locke's work there.
I still love that local. As soon as I saw him do one creature on his DeviantArt page, I'm like, I need to commission this guy for these things. And it's funny because the local fauna actually started out because I needed a justification for why a Federated Suns territory unit would actually have a dragon as their emblem. Because let's be honest here, that's the enemy as far as most
Yeah,
Fed Suns
right.
are concerned. So I struck upon the idea that here's why, right here, the Akalan dragons. And, a lot of development and a lot of work went into trying to make sure that these all have at least a reasonable evolutionary path to coincide with one another on the same planet. And I loved writing for these guys. It was probably some of the most free feeling writing that I was able to do. It was just raw creativity.
That's awesome.
But yeah.
What do we have here?
That's Plog going, "I'm a bird, mother effer, I'm a bird." But that was his comment when he was working on it. Apparently, did not draw too much respect from people around him while he was working on it. But that is the apex predator of the Akala 3. That is a roc, essentially, a gigantic bird. Carbon fiber, naturally occurring carbon fiber skeleton, all sorts of stuff like that. This thing will tear apart a light mech. But the that is the one of the biggest reasons why one of the two biggest reasons why all of the cities on Akala 3 are extremely well defended with military grade turrets everywhere. They these ones luckily enough stay mostly away from the civilization of humanity, but when there's an encounter with VTOL craft, for example, it's pretty much a rock Acheron everything VTOL zero. There's a lot of little notes and things of that. Ah, the cheetah on steroids, the Cheezer. This it would be an apex predator on Earth. This thing is prey on Akala 3. It is basically an armored, even faster than normal cheetah with twin tails because of the fact that it has to be able to at least have one at any given point, and the predators around there are enough to nip them off. It's. I love this one. It's a little goofy, I'll admit, but in a very, very good way. And I love the blend of having the scaled armor on the back of a mammal. It's just a wonderful design.
Yeah, all this time I was recently saw a documentary and all the cheetah was like my favorite animal when I was a kid, and it's just one of those things that you never realize the obvious. But in the documentary, they were talking about how important the tail was for balance when the cheetah is running, and I was like, oh, of course. Why didn't I realize this very cool fact? And then they showed the cheetah running in slow motion and kind of how it was shifting weight and balancing and managing the turns and how it used this tail in that process. So yeah, I love that. Backup tail as needed.
Yep,
Very cool.
absolutely. And has sort of like a sense of sonar. That's one reason. Ah, there we go. The demon squirrel. There it is.
How big is the
There's
demon
no.
squirrel?
Yes. It's big enough, shall we say. I would say it's probably half again to twice the size of a normal squirrel is my idea behind this thing. It's a lovable little critter. It has it's got the whole, sort of satanic looking mustache and horns made all out of fur, and has like a sort of forked tail and everything. The level of detail, he just went completely into this, all in, and I just love the creativity. He just went full creative mode on this thing when he made it, and I it's just adorable.
Awesome.
And there is the stuff of nightmares. That is the Gati, the giant armored alligator that eats everything. That thing's, if memory serves, 19 meters in length, and can basically a tail slap a light to medium mech's leg off. And if you shoot a PPC at it, it just looks at you like you just became that much more tasty. As backup, complete backup set of organs. It's just ridiculously overthought, this thing, and it's the most that's the main reason why all of the cities have extremely heavy defense turrets, because they're required to take these things down.
Whew.
And they're also part of the reason why you never invade this planet, because no. And there's the best perspective I can give you for size. The dragons are a bit meant to be about 2.5 to, I think, 2.5 to 3 meters in length overall. The Cheezer are basically about the same size as a regular cheetah. And then you can see the gigantic rock in the background flying up high with its 25-meter wingspan. And there's a reason why you don't mess around in the skies on that planet. Thunderhead himself actually even commented that this just seems like a place that we don't go. Why would you ever go here? And it's, there's reasons. There's reasons, luckily enough. But yeah, it or for early settlers, it did not end well.
Yeah, those are some stories. I'd love some more like explorer core stories, finding new worlds. All right, let's dive in some units here. This will be our last kind of gallery preview. But give me some units and we'll hop to ones that particularly stand out for you.
Oh, for me, definitely the Sumatha, Sumaire. It's a
All right.
would. Oh, I guess they are in alphabetical order, sir. jump around like crazy.
That's all right. That makes it easy to find.
But that right there was my first ever character mech. And eventually managed to find its way into this. It is a brutal bastard and is the one that said character had that reunion with, which was not too happy, shall we say. But it's I love the Mad Cat. I always have. You know, it's there are people who would judge me for saying that, I know, but yes, I am one of them. But yeah. Feel free to just go and scroll on through. We can stop at any ones that you want to take a look at for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking at the other folder here. There's things in different folders, so it may just the versions that you're mentioning may just be in different folders.
There it is. There's the final version. The one that had that mostly black. That was the final version.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then the one just to the left of it is the repaint it gets when it's in the possession of the Word of Blake.
Got it.
That's how it's re-encountered. And that is the it was a pain in the butt to try and find a livery for the Word of Blake 55th Shadow Division, because you know it's an all new Shadow Division. Because I didn't want to include any of the existing canonical Shadow Divisions, because I don't know, you know, the ones that are missing in the end, I don't know if they're going to show up somehow later in the canon fiction.
Right.
And but trying to create a new livery that didn't exist already with all of the pre-existing units, I finally came up with this very simple pattern, and Plog did a beautiful job of it, just having white down the center and essentially fading out the black on the sides.
Right.
Very airbrush friendly. No, I don't have an airbrush.
All right, what's another one?
Oh, probably the Mad Cat. Oh, actually, the demon, the one you got right now is also another favorite of mine. There's actually the Archer
this
was
one.
Actually yeah, it's based on a MechWarrior Online build again, but it we've never had an MRM based Archer in canon. I don't know why. It just makes sense. So there you got a double MRM 30 Archer for you.
Gotcha.
It's just such a giggle worthy thing. The Demoness is definitely another. That's the Mad Cat, but that is it should be under DEM for
All
sure.
Right, scrolling to D. I love the scale on this drop ship.
Yeah, the Colossus is fittingly named. It is a giant ship. I love the look of it. He did a great job of doing the slightly modified refitted version of it.
Well, for those, there are hundreds of images. Scroll through, enjoy them. You know, we can't do them all here, but yeah, they're beautiful.
The one thing, if you'd be willing to bring up, actually, would be the two cover, and they're in there in the base folder. The above the other folders is just the two really really big images.
Yep, let's do it. So let's start. Let's do the cover art first. We can look at Alan's.
This was the piece that I actually have above my television in a 40-inch wide print, and that's downscaled from how large it can actually print at. It can go like 70 inches wide. And that helped me keep myself motivated to keep working on this project for sure. And one thing that's kind of fun is the left-hand side is designs by Jason Spikerman for Orbital Heavy Industries. You've got the Atlas in the middle, obviously, and then you have designs by Michael Zeta of Metalcore Collectibles on the right-hand side, who were the two biggest contributors of designs for this entire project. And there's your Tyrant right there as well.
Very cool.
Right by the Atlas. Yeah. Just love how this all, you know, it shows sort of a bit of the idea of the scale of how there's every single unit type is involved in this project.
Definitely. All right, here's your other big one.
That one. This was the last piece of art to be delivered for Operation Lancaster. It actually was delivered post launch originally. But this was the piece I mentioned by Paralis, and I mentioned that I really hope she gets commissioned for cover artwork, because this is the kind of quality she'll do if you just let her go. And she's really, really good at what she does. And this is her first time ever doing hard surfaces at all. You know, she's never done fighters. She's never done metallic surfaces. She's never done, you know, even drawing people she's not terribly comfortable with. And she still did this well. So, I mean, yeah.
And give us some context for this image.
This is Colonel Ann Lawrence perched atop her new gen assault Omnimech. Her dragon companion Corey, and this is a shot of the natural sort of vistas you can imagine on Akala 3, the very first cityscape that you were looking at earlier with the spaceport in the background. This is that same world.
Gotcha.
And this is what you have outside the cities. They are very wild. It just the Thunderhead commented on this when I shared it on his storm report, and the sunset really just makes this work because it doesn't look like it's painted. It looks like a bloody sunset. Yeah, it's
Awesome.
just such good mastery of lighting.
What what do you want to do next? Kind of what's a broad scale? What was maybe the most enjoyable aspect of this project for you?
I'll say the writing. I really didn't realize when I started this, I didn't realize just how much I was going to fall in love with writing. I'm working now on trying to put together the bits and pieces for a fantasy setting, for all original story. And though I will say, I already have at least one short story lined up for writing for Shrapnel, and I submitted one about a year and a half ago. I think it's getting close to review time for it. Based back during the Ameris Civil War, and a certain event that I think doesn't get enough attention, as being just a footnote essentially in a book, but it does have a piece of art for it, which is kind of neat.
Awesome.
So, not my art, but canonical art.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was my suggestion. I was gonna say dive into some shrapnel. That'll be the perfect thing to get the foothold in. But yeah. It's
The slow response time has been a little bit discouraging, but I'm not going to blame that on anyone. That's life. That happens. That's how it goes. And the one thing I will say that I was grateful somebody did tell me is when I received the email, that they reviewed it, I'm going to stop, get a drink, calm my nerves, come back, and expect to get my butt ripped open on the thing because I know that it's gonna, they don't care about my feelings. They want to publish a good story. So, people looking to become writers, have that in mind whenever you get that email.
Definitely. Well, I'll look forward to that. In the meantime, there's lot of content to kind of read through this project. But yes. So for those out there, we definitely want to be steering some attention to the artist, giving them as much work as possible. I know in my own work with artists, and actually this is an idea I have for a future episode of trying to get like a compilation podcast with a bunch of different artists talking about what how they want commissioners to communicate their vision to them and to make it as easy as possible for them to put it onto paper. And certainly that's a skill I've been developing myself, as we go. For you, having commissioned so many pieces of art at this point, what are the things that you've learned along the way to kind of help facilitate that process of communicating with the artist and making sure that they have a good understanding of what your vision is for the piece, so that they can kind of go and not only give you what you want, but also have the flexibility to surprise you, with their own skill and their own imagination.
Well, one thing is to try and leave things a little bit open-ended as far as, mentioning if you have an idea that might work better, please feel free to include that in the initial sketch. For me, it was, and I learned this the hard way early on. I did not include enough information when I started doing my early stuff. So I do hope that people are able to learn this vicariously through me. More information, the better. For example, when we were doing the art pieces for the Operation Lancaster itself, the actual event article, I gave him the whole thing straight up. And I then would lay out essentially an outline of, which scenes I would like to have depicted and how, and giving him details and references and possibly some angles of, how you might want to have, say the ships laid out or, poses that I might want to have characters in, things of that sort. More information, the better. But again, but make sure the artist doesn't feel too confined. Make sure that, that they are aware if they have a better idea, give it a shot. The worst case scenario, they have to change the sketch again. And the one thing also is don't be afraid to speak up. If you see something that you'd like to have changed, I was very timid early on. Obviously, don't be overbearing. Don't be rude. Don't be crass. Don't do anything like that at all. Be very respectful because the friendlier you are with your artists, the better they're going to work for you, for sure. Treat them like they deserve to be treated, good artists. I have a couple pieces in there that I still to this day wish I'd had tweaked a certain way or this, that, and the other that I just didn't because I was afraid to when I originally commissioned them. you know, as I didn't want to seem like I was being, this isn't good enough, rah rah rah. But, you know, but it's one of those things where it's, you know, sort of suggests, is, you know, would you be willing to make this such and such tweak if you feel like it's a huge thing? You know, have it be a conversation, not just a straight up direction. You know,
Right.
I don't want
Okay.
to be just an overlord. But admittedly, I may have gotten lucky with the artists I have, and some artists may not necessarily operate that way. Every single artist that I worked with was a very much two-way street, for sure, and as far as communication goes. And that's one of the reasons why I've been so fortunate, because everything was able to work. You know, I was able to work with them to get everything to the vision that it needs to be. And that's about the best I can give you, honestly, is just all the information you can give them. You know, and if you're doing technical readout imagery, don't just send them a picture of the miniature, send them the specs too. Because, you know, otherwise they might misrepresent what the weapon systems are and things of that sort. That can happen. The one thing I will say is, make sure you definitely define what each individual thing was. There was a slight faux pas. I Partly my fault, partly Plog's fault. You know, it's just one of those things that happened, and it's included, not to poke fun at him, but it's just to include it, you know, in the making of Operation Lancaster a bit at the end of the whole entire thing, as this can happen. You know, when you're commissioning an artist, this kind of mistake can happen. It was a case where the heavy LRM carrier turret ended up on a hovercraft body, and there, you know, there was just that wouldn't work. I actually wanted to try and salvage that. I wanted to make it work because it looked so badass, but it was a case where I couldn't physically build the darn thing in the actual specs. So it was that, unfortunately, had to be set aside, as much to my chagrin, because I really did like it. But it was that, you know, things like that can happen. And just, you know, whenever something shows up that's not quite what you wanted, be prepared to just, you know, respectfully say, hey, there's a bit of an issue here. You know, we can work through this. Here's what I was sort of really wanted to have, you know, and offer examples, offer references, offer, you know, design details that you might want to have worked in. Try your best not to do what I did, which was develop things after you've already commissioned art that needed to show up in previous art pieces. So you may have to make them go back and make edits.
Well, I
Oops.
imagine as long as you're paying them, then, you know, the art's not
Yeah,
going
but
to be negative.
well, you know, I say that partly for the artist's sake and partly for the commissioner's sake, because it does cost money to make those edits. So, you know,
Definitely.
that's the other thing, is to make sure you know exactly what you want and make sure that you're absolutely certain that there's not going to be any edits later on, because it can add up. You know, a plug is very fair with its pricing, but it's still one thing where, you know, it can add up if you make some critical mistake that you have to go through the entire lineup again and fix it. Yeah.
Yeah, one piece that I've been kind of musing on that I want to find somebody is, I would love, I don't know what mech it would be, but just to take a mech, maybe something, you know, ubiquitous like a Timberwolf or something that's, you know, well known, and say, can you redesign this but make it look as realistic as possible? And in the sense of, if you look at LRMs, an actual LRM is about the size of a mortar, you know, so pretty small. You know, they're not these huge gaping, you know, missile holes and stuff. You know, what would that look like? What would an actual machine, and what would the true size of these emplacements? It wouldn't, a Timberwolf, you know, if you go to the true scale, it wouldn't be these huge pods. It would just be kind of a small thing with 20, you know, mortar size holes, and there's got to be some kind of reload system, and just say, hey, I want you to really think about this and what it would really look like, you know, if you took in all the scale into account. I think that would be fascinating to kind of see a redesign of a mech, kind of with that. Like, how big would a PPC really be? You know, it's probably not this gargantuan,
Giant
you
gaping
know,
hole. Yeah,
exactly.
it's actually one of the things that Jason Spikerman over Orbital Heavy Industries, actually, he and I had a conversation about. There's a reason why you'll see some slight inconsistencies with weapon system sizes relative to the mechs, because they are different designers. The most hilarious example I can give you, actually, of what happened when Plog did the new gen assault mech, the one that's in the center of the cover, of the not the expanded cover, but the left-hand side, is Alan Blackwell's iteration of that art has the double PPC in the right arm, and that's more correct to what the miniature was supposed to be. And Plog sort of blew that up to about three times the size of the cannon barrels. And the thing is, Plog is just one. It was one of the things that I was too afraid to have him edit early on, and it just, you know, that was an example of that. But you know, it was. Jason Spikerman, with his Orbital Heavy Industries designs, tends to go with much smaller barrels that he feels are much more realistic, rightfully so. Meanwhile, when I was working with Metalcore Collectibles, we went sort of leaning more toward the more typical BattleTech big gun style. It's a chunk. The giant PVC is giant laser barrels, giant autocannons, etc. So there's a little bit of inconsistency that some people might spot in there. They probably will now that I've said something. That's something that has come up. You're absolutely right. It's interesting to see just how tiny the weapons really look when you actually appropriately scale them for the actual machine they're supposed to be on.
Definitely.
So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I was, because people, the Elrond thing and the Esrond thing have always been a, big thing for me, because, people will be like, how do you fit, 100 reloads into that? And then, like, it inspired
Very
kind of
carefully.
do the math, and you're like, all right, well, you have a ton, and, if you divide it by this much, it equals this much weight, and what's a munition that weighs about that much? Oh, a mortar does. All right, so Elrond's is approximately the size of a mortar,
So
so that was
why
a,
is the missile launcher tube 3 feet in diameter? Yeah,
Exactly.
exactly.
Exactly. One of the we're talking, I think it was PPC from the latest Higher Steel episode two. The PPC on the tank, I thought that was a great visual representation of it. I don't know if you got a chance to catch that one yet, but
Oh,
that
I've
was a
seen it.
great
I've
shot,
seen it.
and kind of the electrical dispersion, when it made contact, very cool. So the more, the visual side of BattleTech definitely excites me. I love Dan Bruin's stuff. I mean, his amazing storyteller as well. And so that's, certainly what turned me on to your project, and just the amazing visuals that you shared with the art thing, and then to be able to go into the story and to kind of dive in. It was very fun, and I appreciate the time and the effort that all of you guys put in. It's truly amazing. And we've only talked kind of more about that main document, the PDF, with the story and then all the technical readouts. But tell us a little bit. There's a whole folder of Alpha Strike cards in there. I saw a Mega Mech file. I haven't played Mega Mech. It's one that's like on my list of things I'd like to do and try this year. Talk about all the supplementary material that comes with Operation Lancaster and how kind of people can enjoy that.
Well, again, like I said before, I tried to make sure that there's at least something for everyone. Depending on your gameplay style, the Alpha Strike cards were a late addition. Thank you, Mega Mech Lab guys, for making it so there's an Alpha Strike card conversion. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I did not want to go through that and do it for 500 variants manually. No. That thought just sort of made me cringe and go, I'm gonna wait. Mega Mech Lab is basically the software. I originally started with Solaris Skunk Works, if you may be familiar with that old
That's what I use
software.
for the TCG, yeah.
That was that one. I used that until I discovered that it had betrayed me, unfortunately, with the Solaris Armor Works. Tanks have to be able to sink all of the heat that they generate, and I'm using the Nova CEWS as a stand-in for a piece of proprietary tech, the Dreadnought. Target data networking system, the Dreadnought TDN, which is basically a very much detuned version of the, in my opinion, almost game-breaking Nova CEWS. So just, I made it partly because I wanted to have some kind of tech that would be advantageous over the Word Blake's C3I and that sort of thing, but also to have it so that I could show what the Nova CEWS could have been had they decided to balance it, When I installed this, it generates two heat. And when I installed that in the tanks, Solaris Armor Works did not take that into account. So all of those designs were finalized. I discovered late that that was a problem. So I ended up having to redo a lot of the variants for the Dreadnought Battlecore when I recreated them into Mega Mech Lab. And I, of course, naturally discovered that Mega Mech Lab can do all sorts of different things, warships all the way down to infantry units. So it was, one all in one piece of software. I'm like, yeah, okay, this is it. I'm gonna stick with this from here on out. So that was started there. Then I was able to create the record sheets from that. I did discover just the other day that there is an issue with some of the record sheet imagery. The record sheets have a little sort of images in the center of the page of the mechs. I did discover there are a couple of them that are missing that. Oops, I'm gonna have to fix that. But I was able to use Mega Mech Lab to create the custom record sheet book, essentially a PDF for that, so everybody can use that for their tabletop war games as they so choose. And then again, the Alpha Strike cards were a late fun addition for that as well. And then there is the art portfolio we've already been looking at, which apparently I need to make some fixes to. Whoopsie. But
Now, I'll definitely be providing links, in the description. Is there a website or something that these things are concentrated on, or are they going to need to find a post that has all the links on it in order to get the documents?
well, the two things that I have available for that, one is the YouTube link, which I will update whenever there's a new release or updated full links or anything like that. I will update that every single the description in there to have all the correct links in there
Right.
every time. And the other one is there is a wiki page, the fan wiki, which also has the links there too.
Awesome.
And then there is an additional thing that I don't have any control over, and I do not make any profit from whatsoever. I've distanced myself from making a single penny on this. I don't want to be in the lawsuit. Thank you very much. I respect Catalyst Game Labs too much for that. But there are the independent artists who make the miniatures, and Metalcore Collectibles. Side note: he would love to be on your show at some point. I think he's a really, really good guy, and
Awesome.
I think you should give him a shot if you have the time. But
Time is
yeah,
always the limiting factor. It's never the
yeah.
interest. There's so many people I want to talk to. It's more,
Yeah.
scheduling it these days, especially with a baby on the way in another 2 months, number two for us. So,
Congratulations.
there might be a lull in podcasting, not that there hasn't already
That's
been, but I'm going to try to cram some podcasts in these next 2 months and enjoy it when I
life.
can. Yeah.
That's life. I did notice on the note of the miniatures though, actually, there the you know the, in addition to Metalcore Collectibles, there is Orbital Heavy Industries, which I mentioned before, Jason Spikerman. I noticed that I think it was ArcLight Miniatures who asked you to bring up when are those going to become the mechs that were made by Jason Spikerman going to become available.
Yep.
The answer is Tuesday. He
Awesome.
actually is launching a Kickstarter on the 21st of February this year, and it's very affordable, I would say. If we can get just 200 people to do the $15 thing, basically every single one of the stretch goals will be unlocked. It starts with the Ravage and Ravage 2. You got the new gen. You got the Sumatha. You've got a lot of people's favorite, the Memory Knight, the one with the big sword, and then the rotary autocannon version of that, the Gun Knight, and then another version he's going to do on his own as well. There are additional tiers above that, but that's the one I would really like people to know about because it's all STLs. It's not going to be physical prints, so you can print them yourself.
Awesome.
He's actually releasing the digital files.
There is it just STLs? Is there an option to get physical prints as well? As someone who doesn't 3D print and has no interest in learning.
I can relate because I don't have a 3D printer myself.
Yeah.
Contact Thunderhead. It's One of the things also that will be up there are commercial print, commercial licenses to print is one of the tiers that
Okay.
are on there. So you may see people actually getting that, so you can purchase them from those
Excellent.
people. And in addition to that, and I'm going on a bit of a ramble here, and I do apologize for that, but there actually is one last tier that will be a couple of people, if they so choose, will have the opportunity to have him craft an all new mech design from scratch.
Excellent.
So.
Yeah, I know the Cameron over that does the Redline TCG. When he does his Kickstarters, he has a similar opportunity for people to kind of back at a certain level and make their own mech design. So very cool. That's definitely a nice little incentive there. And I'll add a link here so people can find that
Rock on.
links here as they're watching. But that's excellent. Devin, as I said, I haven't made it through all 515 pages. Is there anything that I missed that you want to kind of that I haven't covered yet that maybe I haven't even seen yet that you wanted to chat about before we wrap up? I got some short stories I'm gonna read in the next week for sure. If they're better than the background story of the operation itself, I'm excited.
They
But
are.
yeah, very
They
cool.
legitimately are. And I'm not saying that to gloat, it just I really do feel that good about them. Honestly, as far as additional things to check out, beyond that, honestly, the one thing I will say is that there is a full-blown character profile index because there are so many individual characters that actually have full personality write-ups on them and everything like that. One funny thing about that is the reason why they're incorporated into the mech TROs is because I didn't want to go through and ha I just realized I couldn't afford to have individual art made for each individual character, so I couldn't separate them out. That's the It may seem a little odd the way that's organized, but it's like, yeah, it would feel strange just having stuff with pictures, stuff with pictures, stuff with pictures, and just raw text,
Yeah.
for a couple hundred pages of character profiles. It just So, you know, that's one thing. There's a lot of little tidbits of information that actually help connect the dots of a lot of things that happen in the historical articles you have read, that are in those. I'm not encouraging you to go through and take the time to read every single bit of it. The main thing I really think you should check out is the short stories for sure. But yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'll do that.
Any other questions you've got for sure? I would love to. If you gotta let me go, that's fine. But you know, if you have more questions, I'm happy to answer.
We'll definitely do a live premiere of this, and so we'll have a live chat, and so people can kind of be dropping their questions in that live chat as we go, and so we can kind of cover anything that I missed. But yeah, this has been fun. You know, Devin, your passion for BattleTech, you know, really kind of shines through this, and you know, as a fan that enjoys this stuff, thank you. Thank you for sharing it with us. Thanks for the time that you put in. You know, and I know certainly as a creator, you know, one of the greatest rewards as a creator is just other people enjoying your work. And so, you know, if this podcast can kind of get the word out and get more eyeballs, you know, on what you've been able to produce and the work of yourself and, you know, Alan and Plog and all the other artists, you know, and the collaborators that you've had, I'm certainly happy to do so. And, you know, they can enjoy and kind of throw their own comments and feedback, you know, about their experience with the product down in the comments. But yeah, I appreciate your time, Devin, you know, both today and, you know, obviously in the creating this awesome project. I had immense fun looking at Plog's work, and, you know, I've exchanged some messages with Matt before, you know, have kind of put on the back burner of trying to commission some stuff, but it's definitely inspired me of like, oh, I've got these ideas for stories, and Matt would be really good to do it. And so, you know, it's inspiring.
He's worth it.
Follow up again, but yeah, and certainly anyone else out there can help support the wonderful artists in the community. But yes, thank you, Devin, and thank you for reaching out to me, you know, and letting me know about, you know, what you're doing. It was fun to kind of look through, and yeah, and record this episode and share with everybody. So I look forward to editing. I look forward to publishing. I look forward to kind of hearing more people find Operation Lancaster and enjoy it as much as I did.
Dude, thank you so much, man. This has been an awesome opportunity. I really am pretty honored given the scope of people who show up on this is just to even be considered for this is fantastic.
Oh, definitely. So. Definitely. Well, I wish I could do more, and I'll keep doing it. You know, guys, it's, you know, for my own plug, you know, throw on Patreon. You know, I work freelance for myself. You know, if I can ever set aside a day of income to record, you know, it's that is Patreon is what helps me justify that. So but yeah, I've you know, it's a ton of fun every time I record, and so, you know, it's yeah, I'm glad that you're enjoying it as well, and yeah, the people out there.
I mean to get on your Patreon for quite some time, and I do sincerely apologize for not getting to it yet, but I have at least bought a pair of your dice.
Excellent. They are guaranteed to roll sixes 1 out of 6 times you roll them. It's well manufactured dice there. I actually have another order going in for some dice in the coming week. But yeah, so Renegade HPG, there's a store. There's some cool swag, some shirts, some fun stuff. I'm actually working on trying to get prints of the MechWarrior 2 Bread for War cover art that I used for the Timothy Seals album on on the YouTube channel, which is actually gets the most attention on my whole channel. Probably because people just
believe it
in the background, but yeah, I love that art, and yeah, I'm trying to get some prints that we can put in the store so people can enjoy that, but yeah, so
that'd be awesome.
That's it. Well, I will say goodbye. Thank you, Devin, for your time, and thank you everyone for watching this podcast and for sharing this conversation, and definitely if you haven't already found Operation Lancaster, download, set aside some evenings and dive in. You know, it's a good time and a great way to enjoy BattleTech. But thanks. This is Travis signing off. Devin.
Thank you.
Until next time.